Hello and welcome to the Westminster Institute. I'm Robert Riley, its director. I'm happy today to welcome back to the Westminster Institute Dr. Andrei Ilarionov, who spoke to us earlier this year on the subject of what makes Putin tick. Much of what he said in that fascinating presentation was, I would say, counterintuitive to many Americans, for the simple fact that American analysts do not personally know Vladimir Putin, and Dr. Ilarionov knows him very well. And the reason is, I should have begun by saying, currently he is a senior fellow at the Center for Security Policy in Washington, but from 2000 to 2005, Dr. Ilarionov was the chief economic advisor of Russian President Putin. Now, and his personal representative in the G8. At the end of 2005, Andrei resigned from his post as a presidential advisor for what he said were three main reasons: the transformation of Russia into a politically non-free country, the capture of the Russian state by the corporation of secret police officers, Siloviki, and horrific corruption within the Russian leadership. Earlier, in 1992, Dr. Ilarionov had served as an economic advisor to Russia's acting prime minister, Igor Gaidar. And from 93 to 94, he was chief economic advisor to Prime Minister Viktor Chernomyrdin. Dr. Ilarionov has written three books and hundreds of articles in Russian economic and social policies. He received his PhD from St. Petersburg University in 1987. Today, he's going to speak to us on what's at stake in the Russia-Ukraine conflict. Andrei just recently returned from 3 weeks in Ukraine. Look forward to your remarks.
Thank you, Robert, for the invitation. It's always a pleasure to be with you and discuss issues of mutual interests for us and for our audience. Yes, I spent last 3 weeks in Ukraine, and it gives me additional information and feedback for understanding what is going on in Ukraine, in Ukraine-Russian relations, and in Ukraine-US relations, and in the triangle Ukraine, Russia, and the United States. With your permission, I'll try to touch three most important topics that I think worth to discuss, at least to be mentioned right now, that our audience would be familiar with the most important and even urgent topics in the current political landscape. The first one that we should not forget, and we should remember all the time, the strategic view of Mr. Putin, the current Russian president, and the current Russian president for last essentially 22 years, and nobody knows how long he's going to be at this position in future, since he's not going to retire anytime soon, or maybe ever. His strategic approach to Ukraine can be summarized in a very simple formula. He would like to establish full control over this country, which means that he would like to establish that control, political, military, diplomatic, with special services, economic, financial, whatever you can think. That can be achieved either through outright military intervention or through much more sophisticated so-called hybrid instruments. Whatever instruments are available, all of them are good for Mr. Putin, and he's ready to use, and he's happy to use all instruments, each of those instruments, or most of these instruments, or all of these instruments at once. what is really important to remember, that he really wants to not to grab a piece of Ukrainian territory, that some people might think, looking at year 2014 annexation of Crimea and Peninsula and Sevastopol, or on ongoing war in Donbas in eastern Ukraine. No, for him it is just little pieces, little steps in achieving his strategic purpose, strategic goal, to establish full control over whole Ukraine. And for that purpose, he has developed a theory and even a vision for him, which he shared not only with his entourage, but with the general public, of the so-called historic Russia. Last time we touched this particular topic of historic Russia, that he has borrowed from the Russian neo-imperialists and developed to the level of political paradigm and actual policies of the modern Kremlin. From Putin's point of view, I would remind what we have discussed last time, historic Russia is a territory that has been conquered by the Russian Empire by the end of 18th century in Europe. And Putin considers his strategic goal to expand the territory of the current Russian Federation to the old western borders of the Russian Empire at the end of 18th century. For those who did not look into the historic map recently, I would remind that the western borders of the Russian Empire at the end of 18th century would put into the so-called Russian side three Baltic countries, Belarus, Ukraine. And Mr. Putin was courageous enough to speak about this publicly, even back in the year 2012, even in written form in his article in Nezavisimaya Gazeta in January year 2012. So he has established that it is his goal. 9 years later, in July year 2021, Mr. Putin has written a new article devoted to the concept that he has developed now in fascinating details, the concept of the so-called one nation that would include not only ethnic Russians, but also ethnic Ukrainians and ethnic Belarusians. Certainly anybody who studied whatever, history, politics, linguistic, ethnic studies, does understand very well. These are three very different ethnic groups. They're to some extent close because they do belong to the Eastern Slavic linguistic group. Many of people who live in this territory belong to the Orthodox, Eastern Orthodox Church. People in that territory spent a lot of time together historically under the same political regimes back in the under the Russian Empire or under the Soviet Union. Nevertheless, there are three different, distinctively different nations, ethnic group and nations. For Mr. Putin, it is not acceptable version. He would like to have all of them, Belarusians and Ukrainians, to be included into Russia, and that is why he called Belarusians and Ukrainians one nation with Russians. And he argued in this article in details, attracting different arguments from history, politics, economics. We will not discuss them because they are so artificial, so superficial, so fantastic that nobody serious in any field of economics, politics, history, linguistics, culture would accept those arguments. But we understand that this article of Mr. Putin, this is not academic study that should be checked and approved by academic community. This is a political study. This is a political paradigm. This is a program of political actions. And he explains, not to academic community, but to his citizens of Russia and to the outside world, what are his intentions. It is no surprise that as soon as this article has been published and have been commented heavily by everybody saying, oh, come on, this is absolutely ridiculous, all these statements. And that is not true, that is not correct, and this is a manipulation. It is not so important. The most important comment came from the Minister of Defense of Russian Federation, Mr. Shoigu, who has announced that this article has been published in millions of copies and sent in each military unit of Russian army. And every officer and each soldier should study this article, because this is a program. This is a political / military program for activities of Russian military in foreseeable future. Once again, we can discuss this article, and actually that was not only that article, because there was a comment next day after appearance of this article. The comment came from Mr. Zelensky, President of Ukraine, who was jokingly suggested that we are not relatives. If we are relatives, we are very remote relatives. We are not brothers. We are probably cousins, but very, very remote cousins. And that is why probably it's not necessary for remote cousins to worry about these brotherly relations. And looks like Mr. Putin was quite upset by this comment from Ukrainian president, because Mr. Putin thought that probably his article, so well prepared from his point of view, was not taken so seriously as he hoped for. And that is why same day in the evening, very late evening after 10 p.m., he invited someone, even not a journalist, somebody from his personal guard, to read questions that had been prepared on purpose, answering which Mr. Putin once again reiterated the most important passages from this article that everybody, including President of Ukraine, would understand the message that he, Mr. Putin, is sending to him. And the message is very clear. Ukrainians and Russians is one nation. Mr. Putin is going to unite these two nations under one political roof. And there are many methods that can be employed to achieve this purpose. And one of the methods has been mentioned four times, twice in the article and twice in those answers, oral answers of Putin next day. And this is message very clear. Ukrainians, even millions of Ukrainians, would rise up against corrupt elite of Ukraine and would overthrow this government and would establish very special friendly relations with Russia. And this thesis about the internal uprising of the so-called pro-Russian thinking Ukrainians has been repeated four times. So that is why it's a very clear program for actions. And this is a very kind of clear and for the moment probably the most detailed political program of Mr. Putin towards Ukraine. And he was trying to realize and implement this program definitely over the last 8 years through the war that he's waging against Ukraine, not only to grab some pieces of territory, but to establish the full control over the country. This is the one topic that attracted a lot of attention, first of all, in summer months of this year. But over last month and a half, since October 30th, we are witnessing unprecedented campaign, information campaign, or to put it more correctly, disinformation campaign on coming concentration of Russian troops on the Ukrainian borders with immediate or almost immediate possibility to invade Ukraine with thousands of Russian troops. Since then, many newspapers, media outlets, and after that, even government officials have stated and have commented on this threat to Ukraine. And from the very first reports about so-called unusual movement of Russian troops, the discussion moved to concentration of Russian troops, then to concentration of Russian troops that are ready to invade Ukraine, to massive Russian troops that are going to invade Ukraine and occupy half of Ukraine, after that two-thirds of Ukraine, after that three-quarters of Ukraine, with capture of all main cities, and with possibility of the launching the Third World War in Europe, and with maps published by many media, including Washington Post or Bild, some other media, with even mentioning possible dates of such an invasion, like Christmas, Catholic or Western Christian Christmas, December 25th, or late January, or early February next year. So that was developing very fast, and now many government leaders and politicians and international organizations are issuing statements about this preparation of Russian troops to invade Ukraine as those invasion is already been established as a fact. We have looked into the facts that have been mentioned for that, and we found that yes, there are some movements of Russian troops, no doubt. But this is a regular, usual movement of Russian troops. Russian troops are not staying in the same place. Over the last 8 years, when the attention, public attention, is focused on Ukraine or on Russian-Ukrainian war, many military specialists, experts, both in regular service and those who retired but who are still is involved in the business of monitoring military movement. We have seen similar movements all the time through all these 8 years. Those movements that we have seen over the last month and a half do not differ much from what we have seen in previous 8 years. Moreover, if we look into the total amount of those troops that have been mentioned in publications. We are shocked by the fact that today, when there is such a huge campaign is going on, public campaign in the world, the number of troops on the Russian-Ukrainian border is less than it was 2 months ago in September, year 2021, and 6-7 months ago in March, April, year 2021, when there was a previous accumulation of Russian troops, but there was nothing comparable, there was no campaign comparable to this one. For example, recently, the so-called intelligence service, intelligence sources are saying that number of Russian troops, so-called near Ukraine, is close to 94,000 troops. It is not small amount, it's substantial amount. But in September this year, the number of the troops that were engaged in the military drills, Zapad means West, 2021, was 200,000. More than double size of what we have today. But 2 months ago, or 2.5 months ago in September, nobody in the world launched such a huge campaign. In March and April, year 2021, the number of so-called battalion tactical groups, some particular units in Russian military forces, was 53 located on the Ukrainian border. Today's 40. 13 groups less. It is 1/5 or 1/4 less than it was 6 or 7 months ago. And once again, in the spring of this year, there was no such a massive campaign on the western side, attracting attention to the accumulation of Russian troops. On the other hand, Ukrainian military sources in the spring were trying to attract attention of the West, of Western countries, of Western leaders, to the accumulation of Russian troops. Not now. For last 50 days, each time when the Ukrainian military leaders have been asked what is their opinion about the concentration of Russian troops on the Ukrainian border, each of them was saying, we don't see anything particular dangerous. Once again, those are military leaders responsible for defense, for intelligence, for security guarantees of own country. And they think, yes, we do see some movements, but it is not something that we should worry about. Who are those military leaders? They are Minister of Defense of Ukraine, Secretary of National Defense and Security, Head of Staff, Head of Border Security, the former Head of Chief Operative Directorate of the Staff of the Ukrainian military. All of them, without exception, are saying, yes, we are monitoring the situation, but we don't see anything in particular that would differ substantially from what we have seen before and what would create a real immediate danger and threat for our country. Only after several weeks of public campaign in the West, in the Western mass media, some of those leaders started to some kind of drifting slightly to the Western point of view, saying, okay, if there is a invasion and attack from Russia. So we would like to have a support from the West. We would like to have equipment, armament, political, diplomatic, and military support. But none of them has said that their intelligence sources say anything about the immediate threat. And this is remarkable. What is probably most important for us to understand whether those concentration of troops, Russian troops on the Russian, on the Ukrainian border, 94,000, does present a real threat for full-scale attack on Ukraine, would be some kind of basic information that is being studied in military, in the first grades of military college, not talking about even military academy. Probably it is known widely for wider audience. To start attack against an enemy, the traditional sources, military sources, recommend the ratio 3-1 between those who are attacking and those who are defending. There should be some kind of majority of those who could hope for some kind of success in attack. We know, and that has been confirmed, that the amount of Russian troops is 94,000. But the Ukrainian military forces comprise of 255,000 troops, plus 200 reservists, which are at very high level of alert, plus 400 veterans of this operation in the east of Ukraine that are ready to be mobilized within several hours. It will be second echelon that is supporting the first echelon of military forces. So that is why we're talking about roughly 850,000 troops that are ready to fight. And they're really ready to fight today compared to year 2014, when due to psychological problems, Ukrainian army was not ready to fight, at least initially. And then we can compare with 94,000 of Russian troops. Mr. Putin might be, not might be, we know he's very aggressive. And he really wants to establish control over Ukraine. But he's not stupid. To do full-scale attack with such a forces against Ukraine that has much more powerful military resources, it sounds quite unconvincing. Just we can look into the historical examples of the Soviet attacks on neighbors in that particular theater. In 1939, in September 1939, when the Soviet Union moved troops into eastern Poland, it was the beginning of the Second World War, when Hitler attacked Poland from the west and Stalin attacked Poland from the east. The territory that has been occupied by the Soviet troops in September 1939 had population of 12 million people. And the Polish army, as we know very well, has received order not to fight back against Soviets. What was the size of army invaded eastern Poland? 500,000 people. With tanks, artillery, all this equipment. Once again, no resistance, almost no resistance. 12 million people, 500,000 army. Almost 30 years later, in 1968, Warsaw Pact armies of five countries, led by the Soviet Union, occupied Czechoslovakia in infamous August occupation August 1968 occupation. Then Czechoslovakia had population of 15 million people. And the Czechoslovak army had received order not to fight back against invasion. How much was the attacking force of five countries? 500,000 people. We have some kind of some basic understanding when we have a country of population or territory of population 12 to 15 million people with no army fighting back, the army of invasion comprises of 500,000 people. All those maps that have been published by the Washington Post, by Bild, by Military Times, showing that invading Russian forces should occupy territory of all left bank Ukraine or eastern Ukraine along the Dnieper River and sometimes even part of the right bank Ukraine with population 22 to 25 million people, which is roughly speaking twice larger than it was in Poland in 1939, with ready to fight Ukrainian army and ready to fight, and we know that it just now very qualified military forces of Ukraine after 8 years of war. The 250,000 people in the first echelon and another 600,000 in the second echelon. And against such an enemy, 94,000 would be enough to attack such a territory with so many people, with such an army that is ready to fight. It is absolutely inconceivable. I can continue on and on because we do study each piece of information that appears in the international media on this so-called immediate or almost immediate attack of Putin on Ukraine, and we don't see any confirmation, any realistic confirmation of this attack. And once again, the most professional and the most responsible commentators of such events is Ukrainian military. Ukrainian military leaders who are personally responsible for defense of their own country. They are not only interested, they are responsible with their lives. Not only freedoms, but lives for defense of their own country. None of them is confirming those reports about immediate attack. So, summing up, I have to say that what we're dealing with unprecedented disinformation campaign concerning the potential so-called immediate attack of the Russian troops on Ukraine, for which we don't have confirmation. And this is the second topic. And the third question would arise immediately. First, who organized this campaign? Who pursued this campaign? And what is the purpose of this campaign? Obviously. And to our great surprise, we are seeing that it is not Mr. Putin who launched this campaign. Mr. Putin joined this campaign at some point, several weeks after its beginning, and he's trying to explode this campaign for his own favor, no doubt. And he started, even in the last few weeks, started to move more troops in more actively than it was before. And clearly that his movements is somehow just his participation in this game. Aha, you are gonna to say that I'm going to threat Ukraine? okay, I'm ready to play this game, and I would support your claims. But even the support of the claims is kind of the very selective and not massive. Nevertheless, Mr. Putin joined this campaign, but he was not an initiator of this campaign. Who was an initiator of this campaign? An initiator of this campaign, very clearly. The first publication was the Washington Post, second Politico, third Foreign Policy, after that CNN joined, after that Bloomberg, and so on. Interestingly enough, it is mass media, it is American mass media, and this is a particular American mass media. It is strikingly, for example, Wall Street Journal did not participate in this campaign. Fox Channel did not participate in this campaign. So that is why it looks like it's a partisan approach to this campaign. And now we need to ask, why particular parts of the American mass media is participating in this campaign? What is the purpose? Until some time, we could produce some hypotheses why it was necessary. But since we have on December 7th the conversation between President of the United States Joe Biden and President of Russia Vladimir Putin, the result or potential reason of this campaign became better understandable. Two presidents did discuss necessity for Ukrainian authorities and Ukrainian society to implement Minsk agreement. Same Minsk agreement that has been proclaimed by the Ukrainian authority as absolutely unacceptable for Ukraine. Because Minsk agreement stipulates that those separatist units in East Donbass would acquire quasi-state status and would be integrated into the political and legal structure of Ukrainian system and would participate in the process of taking decisions for Ukraine, especially for orientation of Ukraine in their foreign policy, in their security policy. It means that those separatist regions would acquire a veto right on Euro-Atlantic integration of Ukraine. That was the proclaimed purpose of Mr. Putin for all these 8 years. And that is what his hybrid instrument of establishing control over Ukraine, not to allow Ukraine to integrate into European institutions, to the Western institutions, to Euro-Atlantic institutions. And for that purpose, Putin has created these two separatist regions, Donetsk and Lugansk, or Ordlo, as abbreviation goes on. And his purpose of creating this Minsk agreement that had been signed in year 2015, and Ukraine was forced to sign in year 2015 under threat of full-scale invasion that time, was to create a veto instrument block for Western integration of Ukraine. Since then, Ukrainian society made very clear that Ukraine does not want to implement Minsk agreement because it means the stop sign for civilization choice of Ukrainian people that has been made during the revolution of dignity in year 2013, year 2014. And this choice has been confirmed many times by Ukrainians over the course of the last 8 years. And now, Mr. Putin was trying to find a way how to force Ukraine to come back to the Minsk agreement and to implement this Minsk agreement and not to allow Ukraine to become part of Western civilization. Unfortunately, Mr. Putin found a person who is ready to listen to him and who is ready to agree with him and who is ready to help him. And that person is Joe Biden, President of the United States. Mr. Putin has explained to Joe Biden in Geneva during their meeting on June 16 this year his desire. Unfortunately, President of the United States has agreed with this proposal of Mr. Putin, accepted it, and since then administration of President Biden started to work in a way to force Ukraine to implement Minsk agreement. So during the December 7th video call between Biden and Putin, both leaders agreed, and this is a joint decision, to put a pressure on Ukraine in order to implement Minsk agreement and to use Minsk agreement as the only instrument on which so-called peaceful settlement can be achieved. Since then, the US president has contacted allies within NATO, within European Union, even within the Pacific region, explaining how important are Minsk agreements. After that, he called President Zelensky of Ukraine, forcing him to accept Minsk agreement as a result of the joint, actually the kind of the whole foot format, just almost everybody or everybody agreed on pressing Ukraine to accept Minsk agreement. Moreover, after the December 7th video call between President Biden and President Putin, National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan gave a press briefing explaining to general public what has been discussed during this video call. And Mr. Sullivan has said that now the position of US administration is to provide, to care about security of Russia. Just let's think a little bit. Mr. Sullivan was not talking about security of Ukraine, providing security Ukraine. He was talking about security of Russia, meaning security of Putin's Russia, security of Putin's regime that is aggressor, that attacked Georgia and occupied 20% of Georgian territory, attacked Ukraine and occupied 12.5% of Ukrainian territory. And now the US administration is taking responsibility for thinking and caring about security of aggressor. I cannot recall any single case in the US history that any US president or any US administration would care about security of aggressor. But now, according to Mr. Sullivan, that's exactly the business of the current administration. And since after that, it became announced just after the video call, U.S. administration announced that $200 million military assistance that was scheduled for Ukraine has been stopped and was not delivered after this conversation. It has been made public that Ukraine would not become member of NATO at least for 10 years, which is clear in clear detour from the position of American administration or any NATO countries that Ukraine would become member of NATO. Now, for the first time, appears this period, at least for 10 years, Ukraine would not become a member of NATO. We see that just right after that, in the defense budget draft, all sanctions that have been put in the draft, sanctions against Russia, have been removed. It was sanctions against 35 leaders of Putin's entourage, responsible for aggressive and corruption behavior. It's sanctions against Nord Stream 2, and the sanctions against the Russian debt. All of them happened just exactly right after the video call between Biden and Putin. After that, Russian Minister of Foreign Affairs has published a special statement explaining what kind of security guarantees Mr. Putin is seeking to get from Mr. Biden. It looks like it is something that has been discussed during this video call. And they are saying very openly their demands from Mr. Putin. Ukraine is not a member of NATO. Ukraine is not provided with map. Western countries do not provide armaments to Ukraine. They do not provide training missions. They do not place Western military on the Ukrainian soil, and so on. Essentially, it means creating a new dividing lines in Europe with a new sphere of influence of Putin in Europe that is, looks like, been given a green light from the American president. And on the other side of the dividing line are two countries, at least two countries at the moment, Ukraine and Belarus. And this is the latest and the most worrisome developments in international relations in the triangle Washington, Kyiv, and Moscow.
So, Andre, let me ask you, what is the interest of the Washington Post and CNN in beginning this, what you call a disinformation campaign?
I don't know. But it is rather hard not to see these coordinated actions of these media that published materials about these military movements, about the threat, in a time that nobody else in the world, no other media, were able to detect anything what all of a sudden became known and visible for those media.
But let me say, since then, the intelligence chief of Ukraine has said that their assessment of the purported Russian plans for an invasion in January are very close to the U.S. intelligence assessments, that they both agree on this. Let me make that point. Second of all, another Ukrainian, whether I'm trying to break whether he's an intelligence or military official, said that Russia has come close to the encirclement of Ukraine because of the buildup of troops, purportedly some 34,000 in Crimea, and also the fact that Russian troops haven't left Belarus. So they're to the north, they're to the south, and they're to the east, creating a very dire strategic situation for Ukraine, in addition to which, on your formula of 3-1 for an invasion force, this is my third point. Russia enjoys advantages that aren't fit within that formula. Number one, complete air superiority, and number two, long-range artillery things that Ukraine does not have, so that should they choose to strike, it could be a devastating and fairly quick. At least that's some people's assessment. Let me stop with those three points and get your reaction.
I think those points demonstrate that really you're not convinced with what I said. And
well, no, it's just that I'm telling you
just,
what's out
just
in the...
Just to clarify some details. Okay, all of them are valid points and we need to look each of them one by one. First of all, the intelligence chief who visited the United States and who gave interview to Military Times here and who provided Military Times with some information about the results of intelligence, and they published by Military Times on November 21st. What is interesting, first of all, this is a very unusual intelligence chief that has been appointed on this position very recently, and his position has never been corroborated by any other military leaders of Ukraine, even by the own Minister of Defense who visited the United States at the same time and who gave very different perspective. They were both together here in the United States. Second, the data that he has provided and that has been published by Military Times on the size of Russian troops exactly shows that the number of the so-called battalion tactical groups now, or at least at the end of November, was less than in September. In November it was 40, in September was 51, in April was 53. So even those that information does not support the claim that today number of Russian troops is larger than it was 2 months ago or 6 months ago. Next point, the map that he has provided to Military Times and that has been published by Military Times has shown that one of the main some kind of arrows of attack that encircling Kharkov, it's the second largest city in Ukraine with population more than 1 million people, maybe 1.5 million people, reaching Poltava and reaching the Dnieper River and occupying substantial chunk of the left bank territory of Ukraine. So these arrows that shows this attack encircling Kharkov, occupation of Poltava, and the reaching the Dnieper River. These amount of troops that marked on this map as 8BTG, means battalion tactical groups. The size of each BTG is between 300 and 600 military personnel. So in the worst case scenario, this whole group is not more than 5,000 people. Anyone who is remotely aware with military tactics and operations understand that 5,000 people, it is absolutely not enough for such an operation. So that is why this is a faked map. Map is very nice, interesting, and attractive, but the information that is shown on this map confirms that it's fake. It is impossible to achieve. Remember how much forces was necessary to attack and occupy Eastern Poland, 500,000. Czechoslovakia, 500,000. 5,000 people for the territory that is larger than Eastern Poland in Czechoslovakia, with army fighting and ready to fight, it's just impossible.
Well, Andre, let me ask you this. It's whether or not Putin engendered this crisis, he's certainly taking advantage of it, and he's gained a great deal of political leverage from it in the expectation that he might actually move militarily. Now, what has he said is a result of this leverage that at least that perception has given him, even if the facts on the ground show that he's not prepared to do that? Well, he has said to NATO leaders and to President Biden, we need to negotiate, we need to sit down together to achieve these guarantees of Russian security, that Ukraine, as you mentioned, will not be a NATO member, and that you won't put military equipment up against our borders. That's his objective. It's not far from what he said in his July essay. So he at least is hoping to be the beneficiary of this perceived threat, and that it will pressure NATO leaders and Biden to do this. Now, he's even ratcheting up the pressure. As you know, he threatened the deployment of intermediate nuclear forces in Europe and says that unless these guarantees are achieved and these negotiations begin, he'll have no alternative but to move militarily. So he's certainly making threats. He's certainly trying to gain his political objective through the perceived threat and by increasing the threat.
He is trying to get something with so-called tough diplomacy, what he cannot receive as a result of military conquer. He understands that he does not have enough forces to occupy Ukraine or to defeat Ukraine, at least in the way that he would like to get it. So that is why he's creating these threats, and he's trying to use these threats against NATO leaders, as you said, or Biden or whoever else, not against Ukraine, because Ukrainians know very well the quality of Russian forces, as well they know the quality of Ukrainian forces. They are more or less equal. And the 8-year war has shown very clearly that the two armies essentially very close to each other by quality of personnel. So that is why there will be no easy work for Putin into Ukraine. And it might be, in some sense, Ukrainian forces may be slightly better than the Russian forces for the moment. So that is why Putin understands it very well. And that is why he is not going to risk any serious attack against Ukraine. But he sees that the weakness of the so-called Western Front is not in Ukrainian military, but in the minds of Western leaders. And that is why he is trying to use these threats not so much against Ukrainians, but against the Western leaders. And he's trying to get concessions from them in the way of non-membership in NATO for Ukraine, on non-placement of armaments, equipment, and so on Ukrainian territory and in some other places. So that is his purpose, and that is his game.
Can I play the devil's advocate here for a moment?
Please.
Let's forget Vladimir Putin. We could say there was a czar, some other autocrat, or a secretary general of the Communist Party. Russia historically has had to rely on defense in depth to protect itself. Napoleon tried, Hitler tried. Because of the vast territory of the empire, the Soviet Union, Soviet forces were able to retreat for hundreds and hundreds of miles, regroup, and then come back against the invader. Wouldn't any Russian leader, looking at the situation, think that if Ukraine is invited into a military alliance that is brought to its border, its southwestern border, that halves the distance to Moscow from, say, the borders of Poland, the next NATO military member, that they would be alarmed because of the strategic situation in which it would put them. So that this worry isn't specific to Vladimir Putin, it would be a worry shared by whoever was ruling Russia.
No.
No. Okay, good. Please respond to that.
No. That was in the past, in history. Today is a different world. Yes, in the past, armies of different emperors, kings, shahs, sultans, moving in all directions. Now there is a possibility for the peaceful existence of all nations. That is not necessary to fight. That's not necessary to wage wars. Moreover, if Ukraine becomes a member of NATO, why Russia could not become a member of NATO?
It's never been invited.
Mr. Putin said in year 2000, and he continued several times in year 2000, year 2001, that he sees Russia as a NATO member. So that is why, yes, today Russia is not ready for NATO membership. Probably tomorrow Russia will not be ready for NATO membership, but day after tomorrow or later, Russia could become a NATO member. And that is why Russia and Ukraine and Belarus would be respected members of NATO alliance. And that is why none of them would pose any threat to each other.
Well, that's looking very far into the future. I can't...
But it could happen even a few years ago.
Well...
If that particular evolution of events, political, diplomatic, and military events, happens in the early year 2000s.
Yeah, that was a missed opportunity, I think.
Correct.
But I can't end without asking you about your recent experiences of 3 weeks in Ukraine. What did you experience there, and what apprehensions were expressed on the part of Ukrainians to you?
Everybody whom I met and who is talking everywhere, everybody is ready to fight. Nobody is going to give up. And everybody is saying that there will be no easy work for Putin or for Putin troops if Putin would decide to attack. It is such a united approach of the whole society that it is hard to miss it. And Mr. Putin knows it. And it is another reason why he would not attack Ukraine. Unlike it was in year 2014, that nobody expected this attack and nobody was ready to fight back Russian troops invading Ukraine. So today's Ukraine is a very different country. Nobody is going to falter, nobody is going to retreat, everybody is going to fight. And that is the most important message from Ukraine. So it is the mood in Ukraine, in Kyiv, is very different from the mood in Washington or Berlin or Paris. Kyiv and Ukraine is ready to fight for its independence, sovereignty, territorial integrity, for freedom and for their Western Euro-Atlantic choice of evolution, for their part of for the possibility to be a part of Western civilization.
Well, they must feel under threat because they've been on high alert. The military forces have been on high alert.
Yeah. And nevertheless, they are high alert, they're ready for that, and they are not going to give up.
How far has Ukraine gotten in cleaning up the economic corruption in the country?
No, it's a long prospect.
Still,
it's
kind
of, no, it's
a long way to go.
A long way to go. Yeah. Now, it's known that no country could do it in a short period of time.
Yeah. How about the general level of living? It's amazing that Putin in here claims that the GDP is $4,000.
He's using exchange rate. By PPP, it will be 12,000. It's still not too high, but
yeah, it's not that.
It's not so bad. Yes, it's kind of 12,000. In Russia, it's now probably 20,000. So it's in Russia it's higher because Russia has oil, gas, a lot of materials, and Russia was enjoying economic growth for the whole decade and double its GDP. Ukraine did not have such economic growth over the last 30 years. So that is why, yes, Ukraine is not so rich in terms of GDP per capita and private consumption per capita. Nevertheless, it would be incorrect to say that it's just kind of absolutely.
Destitute.
Yes, no. It's a long to do in Ukraine in terms of economic reforms, in terms of establishing conditions for fast economic growth, sustained economic growth, yes, but just it's not correct to say that it is just really country is in poverty, in absolute poverty. It's not true.
With you as an economist, Andrei, one part of Putin's article you must have enjoyed most was his claim that had Ukraine remained in Russia or aligned with Russia, its prosperity would have grown and it wouldn't have been so corrupt as it is today when it was the Soviet-sponsored leadership
No, but
that corrupted the place.
we know that the by level of corruption, Russia is worse than
Yeah,
Ukraine.
yeah.
So that is why, if to apply the Putin's approach, so in that case, Ukraine would be more corrupted today with Russia.
Oh, sure.
Definitely,
I mean,
no doubt.
that's what's so
Yeah.
fantastical about what he says. Who do you think wrote? I mean, that's a 7,000, 8,000 word article. Who do you suppose wrote it?
Well, definitely some people did contribute some facts and materials, and maybe somebody helped to write it, but I have no doubt that substantial portions of this essay has been written by Putin himself.
It is he.
Or definitely at least edited, or some kind of
Yeah.
it is something that is very close to his heart and his mind. And that is why the general idea and the maybe composition and the particular topics and particular ideas belongs to him, no doubt.
What do the Ukrainians tell you about Zelensky's leadership? What do they think of him?
Country is divided right now. There are some people who support Zelensky. It's probably a quarter of population. But three quarters of population are extremely disappointed with Mr. Zelensky.
Do they have someone whom they would support?
It depends when there will be election.
Yeah.
They will find someone. But right now, it's a very deep, pronounced disappointment. 2.5 years ago, when 73% of Ukrainians voted for Zelensky, there was an incredible wave of optimism and hope. People genuinely hoped that this young person, maybe unexperienced, definitely unexperienced politically, but not involved in political schemes or corruption scheme or bureaucratic scheme, as they thought then, would really bring a new era of not, if not prosperity, but some kind of cleanliness
Yeah.
and honesty, and some kind of coherent behavior that did not happen. To some extent, people claim that it's in some cases even worse than before.
He's under control of the kleptocrats.
Much worse. It's maybe not so much kleptocracy. Much worse is that he's trying to build authoritarian political regime. His attack on mass media, on press, on opposition, his attacks on basic institutions of a democratic society like parliament or constitutional court are appalling.
So he's developed an authoritarian streak.
He's not yet developed it, but he's moving
in that direction.
In that direction, following closely to experience of Mr. Putin from Russia and Mr. Lukashenko from Belarus, and this is the most disappointment for those who can see it.
Thank you very much. I want to thank our speaker, Dr. Andrei Ilarionov, for joining us today to discuss what the stakes are in the Russian-Ukraine conflict. As I mentioned at the top of the program, I invite our viewers to go to the Westminster website or our YouTube channel and find Andrei's earlier talk on what makes Putin tick. And I also invite the viewers to take a look at the other offerings we have, both on Russia, China, the Middle East. And thank you for joining us today. I'm Robert Riley, the director of Westminster Institute.